Testing on.
Yep. Hello.
Hello. Hello. Welcome to the For Those Who Inquired podcast. I'm your host, Edward Marlowe, and we are in my kitchen on Kirkwood Drive here in Murray, Kentucky. Isn't this fun, Neil?
It is fun. I know you called earlier today and said, can we just do something virtual? And I said, I'm not doing anything virtual. Just to hell with it.
Mm-hmm.
So
2020 has been virtually terrible.
So I wanted to do it in person. Plus, I get to see the cat. Was hoping maybe the dishwasher might drop in. You never know. That could happen.
I asked her to drop in. She is a little bit gun shy. She wasn't interested in being on our crappy homemade podcast. For those who want a visual of what we have set up right now, Neil is on vacation this week, and I am recovering from what was an epic Wednesday championship in the KHSAA Boys Golf State Tournament. So we essentially have a windscreen on the cover of a phone, and I have some styrofoam set up to like kill any sort of echo that we might have in the room. So this
is our setup. I thought you were recreating Stonehenge.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely
what I thought.
Also, I'm going to go ahead and let my cat in so that way he can have some lunch.
Yeah. Say I'm hungry. Give me some food.
There we go.
All right.
Well, in the sporting world, Neil, we're going to have Sunday football in Western Kentucky.
Yes.
When's the last time you called, before we even go into the fact that the OVC is going to have Sunday football in the spring, when's the last time you called a Sunday football game?
I don't recall ever calling one. Ever. If I have, someone would have to correct me.
Yeah.
I know there was one time we were playing SIU and it came out of an awful thunderstorm, horrible, delayed the game for a while, and there was talk of coming back the next day and playing it, but we managed to get through and play the game that night. So that didn't happen. But if there's a time that we played on Sunday, I sure don't remember it.
Yeah, and I mean, we've had different games. Thursday night is often a popular night for OVC football. I know Saturday afternoons, Saturday nights. I believe there's been even Friday night football in the OVC because they've been able to go and take on FBS opponents on the road.
Right.
And FCS teams oftentimes are at the behest of their FBS, you know, paycheck. They'll play when they want to play. But you have Sunday football in spring. By the way, some clarity here. The first day of the OVC football season is slated for February 21st, 2021, which is what you and I believed would be the case. That does come toward the tail end of OVC men's and women's basketball regular season play. So I think you and I had kind of alluded to this in a couple of podcasts prior. We believed that the college football season for FCS would probably wrap around whatever college basketball was going to look like.
That's right.
So, I mean, we're in a situation now where the OVC teams, particularly Murray State University, will have to navigate the weekend. You'll have doubleheader basketball probably on Thursday, doubleheader basketball on Saturday, and you're going to go straight into some football and probably afternoon baseball and softball while football's playing. So, I mean, campuses are going to be, even if they're limited, they're going to be busy.
And a lot of this, and we may have discussed this last week, if we didn't on mic, I know we did off mic, is just the logistics. We're not the SEC. We don't have unlimited staff, and teams aren't, it's not like ESPN sending entire crews to do our TV games. We have to do them. We have to do all the scoring of them. We don't have that large a staff. So in order to spread that out, somebody's going to have to play on Sunday. As I understand it, now they haven't released these schedules. I think they're looking at Friday doubleheader, Saturday single game for baseball, and probably likely softball for the league games.
Right.
That way everybody gets their little piece of the pie on ESPN+. Basketball again on Thursday, Saturday. You'll have baseball, softball on Friday and Saturday, and those will, you know, be switched sometimes depending on who's home, who's away, things
right.
of that sort. Most everybody has two of these systems where you could do two different things on a separate day, and that way football gets its own thing, or you could do football and either basket or softball or a baseball game on Sunday if something gets moved there because of rain or anything like that. But everybody kind of gets their piece. parents can watch, friends can watch, families can watch, and it also allows you to watch all the games if they allow fans. You can watch the basketball games, and then you can come to Sunday and watch the football game. So if fans are allowed, you wouldn't have to miss anything. I don't have any idea where we'll be in that regard. That hasn't been announced, and even if they announce it, I don't think it would matter because we don't really know that.
Yeah, it's still 2020 was the year to survive and not to thrive. That's going to bleed over in 2021. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about it. And, you know, when I think of our colleagues at Murray State University, Athletic Director Kevin Saul, his staff, Dave Winder, Parker Griffith, you've got, you know, Eric Frederick and everybody in between on the middle, Fulton Hart and the football program. You know, all of these teams, they just want to play. I know it comes down to a simple derivative such as that. They just want to play. You have to find a way to do that. So this is their way of trying to make that happen. You take a look at Murray State's football slate, which I do believe football practice has finally resumed at Murray State University, at least in some form or fashion. You take a look at Murray State's football slate, you do open at exactly where the season ended last year.
Right.
At Southeast Missouri. So that's, you know, there's probably going to be some high emotions in that regard. You know, it's going to be Dean Hood's first day on the job, so to speak. And then on top of that, a lot of these players remember how last year ended. You know, a changing of the guard at the coaching position, a tough loss at Cape Girardeau. That was a terrific football game that the Racers were in the hunt for almost the entire game, up until a couple of late drives by the Redhawks and a quarterback in Daniel Santa Catarina that, you know, took them to the playoffs. So it's a really good team right out of the gate, and then it probably doesn't get much easier because you've got February 28th, you're at home against UT Martin, which ended up being a heck of a lot better than people thought last year.
Yeah.
And they're going to be really good. Then you do get an open week right away, which you have to wonder, is that coming at a good time? Are the Racers going to have to still balance some COVID issues at that point? What's the league going to look like from that perspective? Then you've got Tennessee Tech, Tennessee State, Eastern Illinois, Austin Peay, and Jacksonville State. And that's a hell of a schedule.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, you knew it was going to be a hell of a schedule anyways. It's the OVC. But in order of operation, based on talent in the league and where we think it stands at this point, Jacksonville State, closing the year, you probably want to play them last anyway because they looked really good against Florida State. Last year was a down year for them, and they still almost made the playoffs.
Yeah.
Austin Peay, I know they went 0-3, but it was against three FBS opponents, and they scored multiple times against FBS teams. Eastern Illinois, you know they're going to be better this year than they were last year. Tennessee State, you don't ever know what you're going to get with Tennessee State. I don't mean that like that sounds. They've brought back Rod Reed again, but then you wonder, like, what Tennessee State are you going to get? Are you going to get the ramped up, you know, NFL, you know, what Coach Stewart always called the New York Jets, so to speak?
Right.
Are you going to get the New York Jets, or are you going to get the New York Jets? Like, are you going to get, like, the winning Jets or, like, the loathsome 0-4 Jets? You're not sure. And in the middle of the year, they may be fighting for something. And then Tennessee State, I mean, golly, Bailey Fisher was terrific last year. And, you know, coming off of his OVC Freshman of the Year status. So it's just not easy. It wasn't going to be easy. But I'm really looking forward to what, you know, Coach Hood and his staff is going to put together before February 21st.
Now, I do have a question. Hopefully we could get Kevin Saul at some point to talk about this. They did disclose you can play one out-of-conference game. Is that earlier? Is that on your open date? When would that be allowed if you're going to play that?
Or can you play it, say, April 11th is your last? Can you play it April 19th?
I don't know.
Your last game of the year.
Yeah.
You know, that's a great question. And I'm sure those answers will come at some point. I'd like to think the Racers would play a non-conference game. We have seen already SIU flirt a little bit with the idea of wanting to play more regional opponents, and that seems reasonable. SIU is within 90 minutes. If you're thinking about travel and distance and perhaps even a level opponent, I'm not judging whether the Salukis are better or worse than the Racers at this point. I'm just saying if you want to play FCS football and you want to stay within 2 hours, you go play SIU, you know, or maybe Chattanooga.
Right.
If you stay somewhere in your regional, you know, wheelhouse.
If they let those schools play, right. We don't know how right. that's working out for those schools.
Yeah, that's a great question, too. So I'm looking forward to it.
This has also got to be, this is spring football, right? Because you can't have, we're going to play, and then we're going to come back in May and have spring football. Like, this is it. Spring football with games,
yeah.
Which is, I think coaches have always wanted it. Maybe they didn't always want 7 or 8 games, but they are always like that. It'd be cool if we could play a couple of games. Because honestly, especially at the FCS level, you're going against yourself constantly, mm-hmm. and you don't really know what you have. You really don't.
And here's another note from our friend Dave Winder, Murray State Athletics. Per the release, NCAA is actually still going to announce selection for a revised 16-team playoff. You know, I know Dean Hood. I'm not sure what the goals are for this first season, but you would have to think, you tell your team, we're going to try for the playoffs. If you get to week 4 or 5 and you're, you know, 1-4, you know, 0-5, maybe, you know, you're revising that mm-hmm. goal. Apparently 11 automatic qualifiers, 5 at-large bids, and the first round of the playoffs is scheduled for April 24th.
So that does give you the end of the year.
That gives you the end of the year.
If you want to.
If you want a little bit of leeway. Yeah. So I don't know if it is prior to, if the season starts February 21st, I'd have to think you'd either take the end of the year or your open week to make that situation.
Yeah. And the open week may be off limits for, because that's basketball championship weekend.
Right.
They may not let anybody play.
That's a great.
I do not know if that's the case.
And that's, yeah, March 7th is Murray State's open week. And you have to think from an OVC men's and women's basketball perspective, if we're talking strictly the Racers, you know, Rochelle Turner has a loaded field right now, a loaded roster. They're hoping to compete against the likes of Belmont, Tennessee Tech, SEMO. Austin Peay, so on and so forth. And the same with men's basketball. I know a lot of the talk right now is revolving around Jordan Adams, Terry Taylor, and Austin Peay. But Murray State,
good.
Belmont, yeah, good.
Keep talking about them.
Put the target on someone else. I think the OVC men's basketball team, and we'll segue to that in just a moment, I think OVC men's basketball can be a two-bid league this year. I'm calling it.
Okay.
I know it's crazy. I'm calling in now, though. I know it's October 8th, 2020.
Well, it's not crazy as it used to be when it only had happened one time.
It's not. It's right.
You know, like, and the guy that made it happen was the commissioner leaving, who was the head of the committee.
Yeah, like I'm just stating. Yeah. I'm stating it now on October 8th, 2020. If Austin Peay has a season that they think they're going to have, and if Murray State and/or Belmont and/or I'm going to throw EKU in the mix too, mm-hmm. if the league delivers at the top, and it's hard to count out Penny Collins at Tennessee State too, but if the league shows improvement and continues to show this improvement, you're going to be hard pressed not to have a second OVC team, because you are going to have someone that comes out of this wretch at the top of talent. You think SEMO's probably going to be a little bit better than a Brad Korn. Brian Maroney at SIU Edwardsville, you know, is certainly trying to improve. I've talked about that time and again.
Got an extension, didn't he?
Yeah. And you don't win at Belmont. No one wins at Belmont,
right.
And he has a win at Belmont.
Yeah.
So, again, all of these things can come into play this season, and I'm looking forward to seeing that kind of develop, you know, as we move into it. So I know that kind of ties in football with basketball, but just... You know, I think it can happen. I think the OVC men's basketball slate, if we get it, knock on wood, if we get it fully played, we don't have any interruptions from a COVID perspective, it's going to be a terrific finish.
The limit, again, is it 27 games? Is that right?
It is 27 games if you play an MTE.
Okay, all right. 20. So that's we'll see on that.
We still don't have a basketball schedule for men or women yet.
Yeah, the men's and women's schedules were supposed to start on December 31st. Not sure if that's still going to happen, but if those remain intact, then that's when they'll start. Be an 18-game season, but it may not look like it normally looks. You may not have the Thursday, Saturday. You may not have doubleheaders. You might, but you might not. You may play the women's game earlier, might play the men's game earlier in the day, especially on a Saturday. I'm not really sure exactly what they're going to do in that regard. And I've heard, because of the difficulty maybe in getting Division I games with the limited resources from conferences, and they want to limit travel, they might add a couple of extra games and play 20. They might play a round-robin OVC schedule, may go to 22. So you might look for that to happen, so a couple of additional, maybe 4 additional OVC games could be what we're looking at.
Well, and here's the thing, too. From a reset perspective, because this is what people need to realize from a college basketball standpoint, is there has to be a reset mechanism, especially for conference play. If you have non-conference play where, say, the women decide they want to go play, you know, Christian Brothers at home, and you know, or somebody, you know, somebody smaller locally, well, they're going to play earlier in the day. That happens. But in a conference standpoint, especially when you have ESPN Plus on the table, if the women play at 5:30, you're not going to have the tight turnaround anymore. I just don't think. At least not for this next year, because there has to be a disinfecting process, there has to be a distancing process, and there has to be a timing process. Mm-hmm. And with ESPN Plus on, like, the purchase, they have the rights to a lot of, you know, these types of games through an older, antiquated OVC digital network. You have to have the timing correct to reset for the next game. Well, we can't reset at 8:30 and be playing until 11 o'clock at night.
No.
So you're going to have your double headers, quote unquote, but I think it's extremely possible that your women or your men get the earlier game, and then there's a 90-minute buffer, so to speak, before the next game happens. So, you know, on top of that, you've alluded to it, but it makes perfect sense. With a truncated non-conference schedule, it is harder for OVC programs, not just Murray State, but all OVC programs, no matter your prestige, to come away with quality opponents in this tight of a time frame.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing some of the big matchups of this season already go to the wayside because games are being canceled left and right. They're like, well, we've had to chop off the front of the schedule. Well, that was the tournament classic that was supposed to be, what, Kentucky and Duke, I believe? We're supposed to play early in the tournament. In the And it's just, like, those types of matchups are even being disheveled. So this isn't like, oh, screw smaller school basketball. This is everybody. So with this realignment, those bigger opponents are having to go and peck away other opponents. This is why we're seeing MTE starting to develop all over the place. Louisville is now in the middle of developing an MTE. You've got, which is going to have like Duquesne and Western Kentucky in it. There's a tournament, the Cancun Classic isn't anywhere near Cancun anymore. The Cancun Challenge, sorry. The Cancun is not anywhere near Cancun at the moment. It's somewhere on the East Coast. These types of, South Dakota is like in the middle of trying to develop like a small bubble for teams to come and play. So in this pecking order, it does leave the OVC a little bit high and dry in that regard. So what's the best way to get a quality opponent? Playing your own conference.
And so there may be two, maybe four more games there. I still believe we might see some sort of bubble scenario in conference games where multiple teams will be at one venue and try to get multiple games out of the way to limit travel. How that'll work, I don't know. There's a lot of moving pieces with that. To me, it just seems like in this COVID area, it's a really good idea. Normally, not a good idea. Because you have to really think of fans very, very hard. But right now, it doesn't look as if fans are going to be a major consideration. I hate to say that, but that fans, you can take a look at the way things are. Watch the World Series last night, and I love the fact, or not the World Series, the MLB playoffs last night. And on the front row, they have cardboard cutouts. For whatever reason, the cardboard cutouts are wearing masks. Give me a dadgum break. Come on. Come on. That's the one time you don't have to wear a mask. If you're a cardboard cutout, you don't have to have a mask.
You're good. Yeah.
So stop wearing masks if you're a cardboard cutout. But nevertheless, that gives you an idea. These are the pro guys who could do it and get a few thousand fans if they wanted to. And even they're not doing it till what, league championship series and World Series, they're going to let some fans in, from what I understand. But right now, they're not. So if you think we're going to be letting thousands and thousands in, that's not happening. I don't know how many we'll let in, if any. A lot of that's going to depend on hot spots and things of that sort. So if you watch your COVID maps, that'll give you an idea of what's going to happen.
And it's also going to depend on testing.
Yes.
I that's something that I know that the league is going to have to really focus on in the coming weeks.
And it's months. Expensive.
Oh, it's extremely expensive.
For each school. I mean, it really is.
It'll be the same price for each school, but the same price for each school doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to have time or effectiveness or from a cost efficiency standpoint. Are they going to even be able to take care of it? That's the real question. You know, are they going to be able to afford it on a repeated basis? That's, you know, these are all questions that have to be answered between now and the end of February as we get closer to the OVC tournament.
And these are things that it might make sense if the conference can go together. And I don't know if you can on testing. I don't know if that's something that's even doable. But if you can bulk buy somehow where someone takes care of the bulk of it, I don't even know if that's practical. But I'm sure they're looking at it. They're smart people that run the league. I'm sure if there's a way to save money for everybody and make it easier for everybody, they will. But that may not be possible. It may not be.
Yeah, it's challenging. I know people are probably tired of hearing about it, but I mean,
it's the way it is. Right now you have to hear about it because it's part of our life. Yeah. And it's part of getting sports back. If you decide we're not testing, you don't have to test, but you won't be playing any sports.
That's right. You will not be playing. Yeah.
But if you're not testing, there's no one's going to hold a gun to your head to make you. But you won't be playing sports if you don't test.
Well, and then you take a look. You take a look at what's happening in the NFL right now with Nashville's outbreak. The Tennessee Titans. Yeah. I mean, it's happening even in the most expensive parts. The programs that you think could afford it. Or are affording it, it's still happening. So it's just an unfortunate situation. And, as a Titans fan, I don't even have really much sympathy. I mean, we're starting to learn more by the hour that the Titans avoided some protocol in certain, procedures and certain practices during their time. Was it advisable? No. Did it happen? Yes. Should the entire team be penalized? That's debatable. But it happened, and now the Titans are facing some tough repercussions, potentially. They might lose their game this week with the Bills, and there's already discussion that if the Titans do lose, their game this week with the Bills, which is supposed to happen in Nashville, hello, Jonathan Harkey, Bills videographer and former racer videographer, the question becomes, do we use win percentage to make the playoffs for the NFL? So I know you're not watching a lot of NFL right now, but for those listeners that are, the Titans are in a tough situation, and honestly, so are the Patriots. Stephon Gilmore tested positive, but I mean, no outbreak has been bigger than what the Titans have experienced. They're up to, I believe, 22 players and staff.
Wow,
and that's last time I checked, that's a 30-35% of your team. So it's not ideal. It's an unfortunate situation that's developing in Tennessee. Sticking with some OVC basketball. Neil, I know you watched a little bit of old John Morant when the NBA restarted.
I did. I watched almost every game. I didn't see every game. I think his last game I was unable to watch because of previous commitments.
Did you buy his jersey?
I do not have a Morant jersey.
No. I don't either, actually. I've got a Morant autograph.
I have bought Morant jerseys for others in my family,
sure.
But I don't have one.
I don't either. I don't have a Morant jersey. I do have some Morant rookie cards that I've pulled. To full disclosure, I have bought one Morant card from a local dealer here in Murray, Kentucky at the Peddler's Mall. I bought a nice pink refractor. It's really pretty, actually. I really like it. But I've digressed. Morant's jersey since the NBA restart is top 15 selling. It's 15th right now.
That's amazing.
Of the 15, the rest of them have been all-stars. And LeBron James is number one.
Wow.
That's the conversation right now that Morant's in. And Morant, Memphis didn't even make the playoffs, technically. They were close. They ended up playing in that ABC game after mid-afternoon. Morant put up 35 against the Portland Trail Blazers, and they fell just short of the 8 seed or forcing that second game with the Portland Trail Blazers. But Morant's jersey is top 15 at 15th in jersey sales right now in the NBA.
And let's be honest, in jersey sales, that's generally kids. And by kids, I mean 18 and under, 22 and under.
Mm-hmm.
That's who buys most of the jerseys.
College
you
kids.
Do see occasionally some men.
Fans.
Maybe some women in some jerseys, but not as much in terms of an actual basketball jersey. Maybe you'll see a 12 t-shirt with Morant. I get that. But in terms of jersey sales, and what that tells me is kids love it. And we saw that when we were in Connecticut. Because,
mm-hmm.
I mean, the kids were just absolutely flocking to see him from Murray State. And now that he's with an NBA team, it's just taken off even that much more. They love the way he plays. They love all sorts of things about Ja. And he's a legitimate star with his talent, but also just with his personality, he is as well.
Well, and you take a look at, I mean, even LeBron James' son, one of LeBron James's quotes from this past season, Bronny James, his son that's kind of the up-and-coming star, he kind of runs in the family,
yeah,
so to speak. But, you know, Bronny James came out and, you know, through LeBron, basically said, LeBron's like, yeah, my son's been watching, you know, Murray State highlights. You know, he's been watching Morant develop and grow and loves him as a player. There's something about Ja's game that young players today are gravitating toward. I don't know if it's the flashy dunks, the passing, the, you know, the elite speed and athleticism, you know, his general demeanor and the way that he, you know, composes himself. Sure, there have been some young mistakes, you know, in his career.
Oh, yeah.
They're
supposed to be.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as you're growing as in a, and I say young mistakes, it's neither here nor there. From a political standpoint, Ja's allowed to believe whatever he wants to believe and think the way that he wants to think. But what I'm saying is that, you know, from a general demeanor standpoint, his rookie year is one of the more memorable rookie years in recent memory. Yeah. He's one of only seven rookies to put together, you know, 17 points, 7 assists, you know, plus 49%, you know, shooting from the field. So, you know, it's just one of those years where people picked somebody to gravitate toward, picked a rookie. Last year was Trae Young and Luka Doncic. This year it was Ja Morant. And Zion Williamson, too, to a degree. But Ja Morant has definitely captured an audience, so to speak, when it comes to a younger generation interested in the NBA game.
He is, I think another thing they really enjoy about him, his skills alone in terms of him getting offense, but making others around him better. And that's hard to do. That's really hard to get others to buy in at times. But we saw it at Murray State. We're seeing it with the Grizzlies. They love playing with him.
Yeah.
Because he's thinking of them first. He's fine if he gets 8 points and 15 assists. He has no issue with it, as long as they put the W up.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of player that everyone loves to play with.
Absolutely. Speaking of that, he dished out another assist just recently. Pretty big assist for those paying attention at home. Ja was able to scrape together some of his own, you know, funding and donations and whatever and so on and so forth. His own endorsement through Hyper Ice, a recovery program that he is now endorsed by. He has donated entirely a recovery room for men's and women's basketball, to which Matt McMahon and Rochelle Turner have both noted on social media their gratitude and thanks for such a donation. Eric Frederick was able to illuminate kind of what it does, but in layman's terms, it's just a recharge and recovery process. It's not anything super invasive, but essentially this room is going to be a chamber of, I don't want to say a chamber of secrets. That sounds like Harry Potter, but it's not really a chamber of secrets. I mean, people have access to this technology, but if you research Hyper Ice, it's a non-invasive blood recharge, so to speak, that helps get oxygen back to your body and gets you just ready to go in a quicker, more timely fashion. So,
and as far as who all has this, the elite of the elite have it in Murray State.
Yeah.
I mean, it's that's how rare it is. In terms of the women's basketball, think what Rochelle does when she brings her young ladies in to have a look. Would you want to come to Murray State? Here's your recovery room.
Yeah.
Where else are you going to see that in the OVC?
No, not nowhere.
It's like, wow.
Some of the top programs in the country don't have.
And then they see the little number 12 and the blue and gold across there. It's like, wow. Yeah, he gave that to us.
Yeah, it was a free gift.
Yeah.
Free of charge.
So that's an impact.
The amazing part about it, too, is you take a look at some of the renderings, and I know that they're in the middle of trying to get this probably installed right now on Murray State's campus, somewhere in the CFSB Center. But you're looking at, I mean, look at the renderings. It's hard to describe the renderings through podcast, but I strongly encourage anybody interested in at least seeing what the room will look like to check out just social media. Check out on Twitter. I've tweeted a lot about it. Neil's tweeted a little bit about it. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's absolutely stunning. I mean, it's going to be a redo of the walls, the floor, you know, new recovery chairs, some recovery tools are involved, and a really, really nice digital graphic of Ja Morant dunking with Murray State colors in the background. So whoever designed this knew what they were doing.
Thought it was.
Really, really impressive stuff. So Again, just another one of John's assists. Many more to come in his career, and I'm really, really looking forward to it. One last note about Morant. I guess apparently, very recently, within earlier this week, actually, Grayson Allen, teammate, lovable former Duke Blue Devil. He's got so many fans across.
They love him in the Bluegrass.
Yeah, they love him in Kentucky. But every time I see people like, I just can't believe I have to root for Grayson Allen. It's like, well, you do. He's a really good basketball player who just happens to play really, really hard in certain occasions.
And he seems to have stopped tripping people.
Yeah, he has stopped tripping people. Yeah, that seems to be
grown up.
It was a malady for him for sure, but. He was recently on another Duke Blue Devils podcast, J.J. Redick, who is an extremely popular podcaster within the NBA ranks and those following the game. I guess recently, Grayson, and of course it was backing up his own teammate, but Grayson specifically said that if he had to choose between Zion Williamson and Ja Morant for his representative in the dunk contest, he'd choose Ja, which is easy to say. I know it's just his teammate.
Right.
But Grayson, the way Grayson put it, he said, man, you expect Zion to dunk that way. He's 6'7", 6'8",
yeah.
230, 240. He's going to be a powerful dunker. That's just naturally his body lends to that. We knew Shaquille O'Neal was going to be a powerful dunker at 7 foot rattling rims. Like, it's just pretty clear. But Morant, I'm not saying he's unassuming, but in a way he is. He's 6'2", 6'3", 180, 185. You don't expect him to be that emphatic of a high flyer, and he is. He is a thunderous dunker, and he can jump as high as anybody else. He nearly cleared Kevin Love earlier this year. He's still upset that he hasn't landed that dunk. He still tweets about it recently. He's like, man, I should have landed that dunk. As a matter of fact, he tweeted about it last week when they replayed Vince Carter's dunk in the Olympics, mm-hmm. where he just thundered over a guy after a steal, easily on their way to a gold medal. Ja literally tweeted, man, I was supposed to land that. Like, he was supposed right. to dunk on Kevin Love. And that's his rookie card. His luminescent rookie card through Panini Chronicles is a picture of him almost dunking over Kevin Love. One of the better posters that we saw in the year. And he didn't even land the dunk. Oh, and he was so mad he didn't land it. So, going back to the dunk contest, he almost made the dunk contest this year. He almost decided to do that. Didn't. Made his own personal choice. He's allowed to do that. But, later on, who knows? Yeah. Maybe. I mean, we saw how good he was at dunking and attempting to dunk. He was good at attempting to dunk. And was good at dunking. Just imagine if he had an open floor with a few props.
Oh, geez.
What could he do? We saw him with props at Murray State. And it was absurd. He dunked over four guys on, Racermania. And I remember Matt McMahon to the side even being nervous. Like, oh man, I'm really nervous. Like, I don't know if he should do this. But he was just like, I'm just going to dunk over four guys. It was Breon, Darnell, Shaq Buchanan. There was a fourth player in there. And I'm trying to think, was it Devin Gilmore?
I actually don't remember. But I was up there then. It was really fun. But by the time he was going to do that, I was up there going, no. Do not let him do this.
Don't get hurt.
Because we didn't even know how good he was then.
Right.
But we had no backup point guard.
Yeah.
He was it. It's like, he gets hurt, we're screwed. We need someone that can get Jonathan Stark the ball.
Yeah.
Not knowing really what we had here. But nevertheless, I was like, oh, come on now. He can't get hurt. He can't get hurt here. Yeah. We have to have him.
Yeah, his sophomore year, there wasn't a backup point guard. You're right. No. I want to close our podcast, Neil, with a quick discussion. No love of the Cardinals here as a Reds fan. Of course, you guys did make it a little bit further in the playoffs than we did.
So what?
I know, right? But last Friday, Bob Gibson passed away.
Yeah.
And, man, I, as someone who's always followed baseball, Bob Gibson, I gravitated to watching old highlights of Bob Gibson. I have Bob Gibson's autograph. I have bought multiple Bob Gibson baseball cards in the past.
Wow.
He's just a dominant player. And the definition, I mean, they changed the game for him. I mean, I know everybody has seen on social media everything that's come out about his career now that he has passed on. His legacy lives. They legitimately changed the mound because of how dominant he was in 1968.
Yeah. It almost wasn't fair because it was amazing. I forgot what his record was. It like 20 something and five or 23 and five, something like that. And Mike Shannon makes the things like, I don't want to know how he won 23. I want to know how you have a 0.680 or a 1.12, whatever his ERA was. How do you lose five games?
Mm-hmm.
And it was no one else was scoring either. Cardinals a little light at times offensively that year. But I got to see Gibson pitch. I got to see him pitch at Wrigley Field in a doubleheader against the Cubs. And when we went to the game, the newspaper said it would be Ferguson Jenkins against Bob Gibson in game one. And I was, wow, this is going to be great.
Oh, wow.
And then we got there, and it was Gibson in game one, and they held Jenkins to game two. I think they thought, let's try to win one of the games, so let's not pitch him against Gibson.
Let's not pay ace on ace.
Yeah, yeah. And so the Cardinals took it to him twice that particular day. But he was fun to watch, man. He was just so fast. We had decent seats. We were in the shade under the net, not right behind home plate, probably 15, 20 rows back. But you could hear that mitt pop. And he was just an amazing to watch. And it's been a tough month because you lost him, you lost Lou Brock. And of the two, Gibson is the only one of the two that I didn't boo. Have you heard my I booed Lou Brock story?
No, I haven't heard that.
This is really bad. This might get some hate mail.
Please tell me.
But this isn't good. When I grew up, I was I liked the Yankees when I was in Cleveland because Cleveland was horrible when I was a kid. But I also liked the Giants because of Willie Mays. Mm-hmm. Willie Mays was my idol. I had a Willie Mays glove. I knew how to fold my cap like Willie Mays and put it in my back pocket. Wore my hat like him. Everything was Willie Mays. I absolutely loved him. So we went to see, my parents took me to see the Cardinals and the Giants. And that was when Bobby Bonds played for the Giants.
Okay, yeah.
And he was,
DeBerry.
Yeah, he was the center fielder at that time. So we went there. I was probably 11, maybe 12 years old. And I have no idea if something had happened the night before. I don't know. But the game's getting ready to start. Giants against the Cardinals. I'm for the Giants. But they now batting Bobby Bonds. And they booed the heck out of him. And I was mad. And I was like, well, all right, that's fine. So they came up. Leading off for the Cardinals, Lou Brock. Boo! Boo! And about midway through the second boo, when I saw all the faces looking back and zeroing in on me, is like I just kind of cowered down. Like, I don't think that's a good idea. And from then on, I shut my mouth. Later on, I would always like Brock. So I actually wasn't booing Brock. I was booing Brock because they booed Bonds.
Yeah.
So that was the only reason. It was childish, but I was a child at the time. Always love watching Brock play as well. So those are two tremendous Cardinals, and hopefully fans will forgive me for booing Lou Brock. It wasn't anything personal.
You'll be forgiven. Going back to you, and so it shall be. Going back to Bob Gibson, you were mentioning in '68, which I know is the year that is often discussed. He went 22-9 and with a you had the ERA right.
1.68.
No, 1.12.
1.12. 1.12. Okay.
Yeah. You had the ERA right. You had 13 shutouts.
Jeez.
13 shutouts.
Go look at some of the great pitchers in their career, and they don't have 13 shutouts. In their career.
No.
He had 13 that year.
That year. It was also the second most innings he pitched in his career, 304. So this isn't like 200, 210, 190. You know, you think you're Stratomatic. But if you can get 200 innings out of somebody, man, you're great. Of course, this is a different era. You know, you're like, oh, you're tired? Nah, you're staying the hell in there. We got to get to Saturday. Yeah. Like, you're pitching the full game. You'll get over it.
I love the McCarver stories that he'd tell when he'd get the thing from the mound, from the dugout, go talk to him. He's like, go talk to him.
I don't feel like doing that. Matter of fact, that season, he had 28 complete games, and he did not lead the league in complete games. He led the league in complete games the next year with 28. But that year... that's just a different era.
Games change. Yeah.
Times change. I mean, you've got relievers. You've got middle relievers now. If you can give a good five innings now, you know, and the way the pitch counts work and playing certain batters, you know, the game has just changed entirely. You might throw a pitcher in for one out now, whereas You know, whereas, you know, and have specialty pitches for specific hitters. Bob Gibson was just going to throw whoever, whenever, however, and get the out. That was his job, and he knew that was his job. Some lifetime numbers for him. His 162-game average was a 2.91 ERA.
Wow.
He finished with a career 2.91 ERA. 250 wins. I would have loved to have seen him get to 300. I know that's the magic number, but he pitched more than 3,800 innings. He finished with 56 shutouts. He actually did have six saves. He had two saves in his final year in 1975, 10 years before I was born. Sorry, Neil. And he started 482 games. He completed 255 of them.
Good gosh.
That's absurd.
Wow.
You just don't see those kind of numbers. And this is a guy that didn't walk batters either. He walked his most batters in 1961, third year of his career. He walked 119. He only walked 100 more batters twice in the rest of his career.
Wow.
So just unreal numbers, things that have been illuminated over the last week or two. We've seen a couple of... Apparently, the last home run he gave up, he came back to the old-timers game and beamed that guy.
Awesome.
Like, he remembered, like, years later.
Right.
He was like, that guy
home and run. And by bean, lobbed it up
yeah,
there.
Like, yeah, like, hey, I'm going to hit you for yeah. that. Like, you, I did not forget that you homered on me in my last year of baseball. His last year of baseball, he went 3-10 with a 5.04 ERA, but, I mean, he still pitched 100 innings for the St. Louis Cardinals. Never played for another organization. Yeah. He's another one of those guys that was a lifer for his program. You know. You think about recent guys. Jeter comes to mind for me from the New York Yankees.
Yeah.
Never left.
Which is rare to do now because of free agency.
Yeah, you go get your money and you go get your best fit. And I'm not saying he was never a good fit for St. Louis. That's not my point. It's just from 59 to 75, he was a Cardinal.
Yeah.
Like, and he was a lifetime Cardinal. Never played for anybody else. So... you will be missed, Bob Gibson.
Throughout the first pitch at the OVC tournament one night in Paducah.
Are you serious?
I'm serious. His son played for one of the teams. Didn't when I say played, he was on one of the teams.
I got to go find that in the Paducah Sun archives. When did that happen?
It had to be, I don't know. I don't think I was doing games.
This is breaking information.
You didn't know this?
I did not know this.
Winder probably knows it. He probably remembers it.
Bob Gibson, the opening pitch in Paducah.
I don't think it was the first pitch of the tournament. He was there for his son's game.
For a game.
So, yeah. But that's the last time I saw him in person was in Paducah.
All right. I'm going to have to dig that up.
The OVC tournament. I would assume someone took a picture of it. I don't know that.
I
don't know if the newspaper did. I promise someone has a picture of it.
Okay. I'll have to find that.
Yeah.
That's unreal. In Paducah. For the OVC tournament. At Brooks Stadium.
Yes. Last time I saw it.
Oh, man. I wish I'd known that last week, but I guess I could still write about that now.
My goodness. I have to do a little digging.
This is revealing to me as the time is flowing in this podcast. Normally, Neil and I, we preemptively talk about a lot of our different subjects just to be prepared for any sort of conversation, but this is real-time revelation to me.
There you go.
Exciting. Well, Neil, as always, I appreciate our time and look forward to us being back in a... not so makeshift studio sometime in the near future.
I hope so. And basketball schedules, I think they'll be toward the end of the month. No one's told me that, but they have to have enough preparation. So give us a couple weeks on that.
Sounds good, Neil.
All right.